Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, let's see. How about Dr. Phil instead? Sanjay Gupta? Hey, greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, Sanjay Gupta as Surgeon General? He attended the University of Michigan Law School, got his MD. He's a doctor. He did some, you know, arguably noble, maybe PR stunt, who knows, emergency surgery when he was in Iraq. But over at the Daily Beast, they have some alternatives that maybe we should consider, because there are some people who are upset with Sanjay Gupta because he's been a pretty consistent and loyal cheerleader for free enterprise, for-profit medicine, and an opponent of either socialized medicine like the VA or single-payer medicine like Medicare, and to the point of basically lying about Michael Moore and Michael Moore's movie Sicko and getting into a big war with him about that. So, you know, there's a bunch of people who are all upset about him taking on Michael Moore. I'm frankly far more concerned about his positions, you know, on the record, the offhanded way over the years. I can't tell you how many times I've screamed at the TV screen as Sanjay Gupta has been being interviewed about this, that, or the other thing having to do with healthcare. And, you know, basically his bias was very clear. If somebody can make money on it, that's great. After all, he's making millions, so why not? But on the other hand, you know, he's a physician. He's a very smart guy. He is apparently fairly open-minded on a wide variety of topics. You know, maybe a lot of good reasons to consider, seriously consider, Sanjay Gupta as the guy. But over at the Daily Beast, they offer some alternatives. If he's not your favorite, how about Dr. Phil? Well, he apparently won't accept the pay cut. There's always House. Gregory House, Dr. Gregory, remember the TV show? Do you really want a Surgeon General, though, who's popping Vicodin every couple hours? I don't think so. There's Dr. Doug Ross, right, of the TV show. I think he's retired, though. Dr. J, oh, wait a minute, he's not a doctor. Dr. Derek Shepard, he's been involved in some sex scandals. Dr. Hibbert from The Simpsons, no, he's a two-dimensional cartoon character. That won't work. How about Dr. Quinn, medicine woman? She mostly just knows about primitive medicine. Dr. Dre, no, a little too violent. E.L. Doctorow. He wanted to rewrite the cigarette warning. Right. How about Dr. Ruth? You know, Dr. Ruth, wouldn't she be great? I think she'd actually make a great Surgeon General. But she apparently was rejected by the Christian right. Doc Brown. Remember Doc Brown in the Back to the Future movies? He was last seen in 1885 and then 1985. Not around. And then, of course, there's Doc, you know, with his friends Grumpy and Sleepy. He's being investigated for a sex scandal involving six other men and a possibly abducted woman. So it looks like it's probably going to be Sanjay Gupta. We'll see. I'm not going to get all incensed about it. I continue because, you know, there's a number of these nominees that I'm not super enthusiastic about, but I'm not all that opposed to. The bottom line is that if you're in the cabinet, you do what the president says, by and large, and or you're doing it the way the president wants it done. And if you don't, you get replaced. The cabinet serves at the pleasure of the president, you know, with the consent of the Senate. And so Barack Obama is not going to be president for a little less than 2 weeks. And, you know, let's wait until he's president before we start, you know, really seriously picking on him. I mean, we could pick on him a little bit. Dianne Feinstein. She, number one, as I said yesterday, and it was very interesting to see how some of the other folks in the progressive media picked up on this meme that I laid out, or maybe it's just great minds think alike and everybody got it all at once. Dianne Feinstein and Jay Rockefeller and a few others, you know, certainly Nancy Pelosi in this crowd, were told back in the day that we were torturing people, that we were killing people, that we were shipping people off to countries where they were torturing and kill people, that we were illegally wiretapping phones, and they didn't do anything to stop it. They didn't object publicly. They didn't blow the thing up. And so when Barack Obama decided that he was going to have a director of the CIA, Leon Panetta, who was not involved, who did not have dirty hands with regard to that stuff, he didn't go to the members of Congress who had dirty hands and tell them in advance. And I think that was very wise. This is one of the things that has most encouraged me about the Obama presidency. Of course, they're doing the kabuki dance of, oh, well, you know, we've got to help, you know, save face for Sinon, and, you know, we'll, you know, blah-de-blah. Blah. But I think that, you know, we've got members of Congress who were complicit in these crimes. I'm not arguing that they should be held responsible for them, but their complicity, frankly, in my opinion, is there for all to see. It has been essentially admitted, and it must not be forgotten, because we don't want it to happen again. And if those who were complicit in the crimes of the Bush administration, even if they're Democrats, even if they're very good Democrats, don't have a say or aren't notified in advance of who's going to be the head of the CIA, that's just fine with me, thank you very much. Just fine with me. The TARP program, ProPublica, or ProPublica, I guess, if you want to be very Latin about it, .org. Show me the TARP money. They've got a list. The list is out, the running count on who's getting the freebies from the Bush administration. You remember George and Henry Paulson coming out and saying, oh, my God, we got to give away all this money, got to give away a pile of money, got to do it right away. Well, who's gotten that money? Turns out $45,000 million of it has gone to Citigroup. AIG got $40 billion of it. J.P. Morgan Chase, $25 billion of it. Bank of America, $25 billion. Wells Fargo, $25 billion. Should we start worrying about all these companies? Or, on the other hand, should we be saying, what the hell, they got $25 billion? And we're you know, Wells Fargo gets $25 billion, and we're all hysterical about whether or not we're going to save 3 million auto workers' jobs with $14 billion loan? These are gifts for all practical purposes. Goldman Sachs, $10 billion. Morgan Stanley, $10 billion. PNC Financial Services, $7 billion. U.S. And we're still in the billions here. $6.5 billion to U.S. Bank Corp. GMAC, $5 billion. Yeah, they became a bank all of a sudden, so they'd qualify. As did American Express. They got $3.3 billion. Fifth Third Bank Corp., $3.4 billion. Regions Financial Corp., $3.5 billion. Financial One, Capital One, $3.5 billion. SunTrust, $4.9 billion. If you hear your bank, you know, it's... Remember the other day we had the Gerald Celente from Trends Research on, and he went to his bank, and I think it was Key Bank, and said, hey, I want to take out the money in cash. And they were not happy about that. Ultimately, they gave it to him in a giant sack of 20s. I'm guessing it was probably, you know, in the neighborhood of 100 grand. He was just closing out his, not even closing out his account. He just wanted to see what would happen. And they put him through all kinds of hell for 2 days. Maybe this has something to do with why. KeyCorp, his bank, got $2.5 billion from TARP. The executives are doing fine. CIT Group, $2.3 billion. Comerica, $2.2 billion. State Street, $2 billion. Marshall and Ilsley, $1.7 billion. Northern Trust, and we're getting into companies I've never even heard of. Northern Trust, $1.7 billion. Zions Bank Corp, $1.4 billion. Huntington Bank Shares, $1.3 billion. And now we get into the millions. Synovus Financial. Now, keep in mind, the application form for this is 2 pages long. Who are you? Do you want the money? Synovus gets $967 million. Popular Incorporated gets $935 million. First Horizon National, $866 million. New York Community Bank Corp, $500 million. Colonial Associates. And the list, by the way, I've just read you the first 2 pages of a 16-page list. It is huge. You can find this thing over at ProPublica. Or ProPublica, however you say it, .org, P-R-O-P-U-B-L-I-C-A.org. bailout bucks to banks. So, bottom line, none of this is going to make a significant dent at all. Just like much of the stimulus package that the Obama administration to come is talking about right now, frankly, in my opinion, is not going to be a big help because, A, they're throwing money at the top in the case of Bush and Paulson, and, B, in the case of Obama, they think the tax cuts are going to do it. You want to stimulate the economy, you have to increase wages on people who already have jobs, raise the minimum wage a couple of bucks, give people the right to unionize immediately, one and two, and three, put people to work at a decent pay, which, you know, the way FDR did it, the CCC, the WPA, he hired people to do the things that need to be done. We need to be hiring people to do the things that need to be done and not run it through five levels of contractors where everybody's skimming a piece off the top. This needs to be wages going to workers. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party, and it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620, KPOJ.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. January is National Eye Care Month, a time when many of us use our new health insurance plans to get our eyes checked. Sadly, millions of people around the world don't have this luxury. This month, stop by Eyes on Broadway and donate your old glasses, which will be redistributed when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru this March to perform eye exams for those less fortunate. A great way to start out the new year. Donate your old glasses at 2300 Northeast Broadway or learn more at eyesonbroadway.com.
If you need dental work, but you just can't bring yourself to go, Dr. Floyd Cash can relate. As a child, he had a bad experience at the dentist and didn't want to go back.
I was worried about going a whole week ahead of time. And I couldn't sleep the night before, and the more I went, the worse it got.
Dr. Cash runs Sleep Dentistry of Portland, dedicated to helping people who have trouble going to the dentist. From oral sedation to IV sedation, or even general anesthesia, Sleep Dentistry of Portland offers the dental work you need in a gentle, non-judgmental atmosphere.
That's what I've been doing since the first day I opened. I've tried to be the gentle dentist, mainly because I knew what had bothered me, so I was trying not to create that in anybody else.
Your introductory appointment is just a dollar, including full examination, any necessary x-rays, and consultation. Get the details at sleepdentistryofportland.com or call 503-405-7686. Sleep Dentistry of Portland.
Who wears Thermacare? People like Mike Beach.
Landscaping's a great business. But this body can take a beating.
The targeted relief of Thermacare heat wraps.
You put it on and wow, relief right where I need it.
Thermacare has patented heat cells that deliver real heat that penetrates deep.
Feels so good.
Relaxes tight muscles all day.
Thermacare is relief I need to keep me moving.
Just wear Thermacare.
It's my secret weapon.
And wear it where it hurts. Use as directed.
Yeah!
You're with the kids at Western World, and who knew stagecoach seats were so hard? You're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning.
Mommy, this is bumpy.
I should have used Preparation H.
And for extra relief, use Preparation H medicated wipes first. Unlike most ordinary wipes, they relieve while you clean. Then use Preparation H maximum strength cream for pain relief on contact.
2 miles to Abilene!
I should have used...
Preparation H, the relief expert, uses directed.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I guess I must have done something right some other time or place, maybe some other life. There's no way I deserve have been blessed. If it was up to me, I'd still be a mess.
Welcome back to Real Talk Radio. Tom Hartman here with you. 21 minutes past the hour. Program brought to you in part by the Teamsters. Proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, Teamster.org, their website. Well, Harry Reid talking tough. Boy, this guy, he's got the cojones. He's a tough guy. He is going to stand up to Barack Obama. Yep. In an interview with The Hills, it's over at Huffington Post. You can read the whole thing in an interview. Well, you can read it in The Hill, for that matter. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said he would not roll over for the new president the way the Republicans did for Bush. Reid stated, quote, "I don't believe in the executive power trumping everything. I believe in our Constitution, three separate but equal branches of government. If Obama steps over the bounds, I will tell him I do not work for Barack Obama. I work with him," said Harry Reid. So let's see. When George W. Bush said... No, Harry, even though you subpoenaed Karl Rove to testify before Congress, he doesn't have to show up. Did you stand up to George W. Bush? When George W. Bush said, Josh Bolton, my chief of staff, he's not going to testify before you either. We're just going to give you the one finger salute. Did Harry say, I'm not going to take this anymore? No. Let's see. When Harriet Myers was subpoenaed to testify before Congress. Did Harry Reid stand up to the president like he's going to stand up to Obama? No. However, when a black guy from Illinois comes with a letter from the governor saying you're our senator, he's like, call out the sergeant at arms, get him out there. I'm sorry, Harry. I like Harry Reid. I really do. You know, I don't know him personally. I can't claim any, you know, deep knowledge of, you know, his heart or soul. I've met him a couple of times, but he seems like a nice guy. He's a good legislator. Harry Reid has a good understanding of the legislative process. And, you know, politically, he's a very decent guy. He's, you know, I agree with him more than I disagree with him on politics. But he is, but this is the guy who says he's going to stand up to the president after the last 8 years? I don't know. Dianne Feinstein, maybe, if she was the leader of the Senate, of the Democrats in the Senate Majority Leader. You know, that I could see. And by the way, Dianne Feinstein now saying, well, you know, why don't we seat Roland Burris? As I've been saying all along. You know, this is, you know, what Blagojevich did is, you know, he dropped something on the sidewalk here and he said, okay, Democrats, I dare you to step in this. And Harry Reid leads the charge and gets 50 of them to take turns jumping on it. And now they're all standing around stinky and you know, wondering what happened. And Blagojevich is going to win this. You need to pick your battles. You know, you just need to pick your battles. And this was a bad mistake. Great blog over at Alternet. Robert Dreyfus writing in The Nation, actually. It's reprinted over at Alternet, but about Afghanistan. I am so hopeful that I am wrong on this. But I have been saying this since I first wrote about this in 2002 on Common Dreams, as I recall, and have been saying from the very beginning, before we even started bombing Afghanistan, don't
do it. There was all this hysteria. Well, you know, Osama bin Laden, Twin Towers, Pentagon, Pennsylvania, blah, 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 it's Osama, and he's in Afghanistan. Blah, blah. The Taliban offered to give Osama bin Laden to a neutral third country for a trial. We should have said, fine, we'll take him. But, you know, George W. Bush didn't want to do that. He wanted to have a supervillain so that he could be a superhero. He wanted to have a war that lasted 8 years. He made it very clear early on that he wasn't going to make the mistake his father made in the war, the first war in Iraq, actually in Kuwait, arguably, where his father concluded that war in only 100 hours. And by the time the election came around, his daddy had lost all the good glow that came with it. And George made it very clear when he was talking with Mickey Herskowitz, his biographer, in 1999, before he was even running for president, that if he had a chance to invade Iraq, he was going to take that invasion, he was going to drag the thing out, he was going to make it last because he would get political capital from it, because wartime presidents have powers that non-wartime presidents don't have, and he was going to have a successful presidency and destroy Social Security and all those other things that he had campaigned on in 1977 when he was running for the House of Representatives from Texas, unsuccessfully, by the way. And he did. So my plea to Barack Obama is get us the hell out of Afghanistan militarily and get us into Afghanistan in a big way, building schools, building hospitals, building the infrastructure. The Karzai government is a corrupt bunch of thieves and thugs. And they're going to stay that way as long as basically we have a militarily occupied country. And Afghanistan is a country that has a multi-hundred-year history of eating alive colonial empires. The Russians, the British, and next it will be us if Obama doesn't learn from history. 27 minutes past the hour. Your call's up next.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you. Our conservative alert for the day. It's not only a toxic mental illness, it is also a way of life. Here we have. This is incredible. In August, congressional Republicans staged a series of political stunts on the floor of the House. Remember this, you know, back in the summer when they were all hysterical that the House, that Nancy Pelosi was going to adjourn the House without having voted to drill for oil along the coastlines. And one of the guys who led that charge, who was all upset that the House wasn't doing the people's business, was Congressman Cliff Stearns, the Republican from Florida. In fact, he issued a news release that said, Stearns calls on House leadership to interrupt members' five-week break to vote on energy legislation. Yes, got to do the people's business, no matter what. Well, no matter what, unless it involves a game between the University of Florida and the University of Oklahoma. Yesterday, in a letter to Speaker Pelosi, Stearns said, hey, can you reschedule the House activity on Thursday and Friday so that I can attend this football game? Say what? This is the vote, by the way, that he wants rescheduled. It's the Electoral College vote where Barack Obama is voted in as President of the United States. It is totally strange, totally strange, totally strange.
Oh, and here's another one. Bush saying the greatest accomplishment of his administration, reforming Social Security. I don't recall that. And then he says the greatest failure, he didn't reform Social Security. These were in back-to-back interviews with conservatives. Very, very strange. The whole Bush thing, very strange. 866-303-2270, your phone number. Gary in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, Gary, what's up?
You know, I'd just like to, you mentioned about our going into Afghanistan. I think it's an example of one of the reasons why vigilante justice is viewed so negatively. Whenever a bigger person or bigger power responds to aggression by a smaller power, there's always the danger of over-responding or false misperceptions or whatever that go along with it. The same with Israel going after Hamas in Gaza. Yeah. You know, if we would have taken, got the world behind us like they were at the time, we would never be in the mess we're in today with that area.
Yeah, no, there were many far more appropriate and less purely military ways to deal with Afghanistan and bin Laden in 2002 and 2003. And frankly, I think that there are ways that Israel could be dealing with Hamas that will be more effective, will be better for Israel over the short term and in particular over the long term than what they're doing right now. And your point is very well taken, Gary. Thank you. Yeah, this is what happens with vigilante justice. Tony in Houston, Texas. Hey, Tony. Tony? No Tony. Okay, Nora in Minneapolis. Hey, Nora.
Oh, hi there, Tom. Hey, I'm calling about the appointment of Dennis Blair for head of intelligence by Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anything about him until I heard on Democracy Now! Yesterday, Amy Goodman had Alan Nairn as a guest.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to, again today, she's going to have him back. And I don't know if you remember that they had been in East Timor in the early 90s. Alan Nairn and Amy Goodman were there when a massacre took place and the military came in and killed 200 people.
Yeah, a friend of mine was the girlfriend of a reporter who was executed right in front of her in East Timor. Yeah, I'm quite familiar with that situation.
Okay. Well, have you heard about Dennis Blair's role in what took place there in 99?
No, I'm unfamiliar with it. I'm sorry. I do know that Henry Kissinger was up to his eyeballs in it.
Oh, well, this is what Alan Nairn says that this is what Dennis Blair did in 1999. He was the U.S.'s military head in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a military or a militia massacre took place in a church where they chopped up people and left pieces of their flesh on the wall of the church. And then the White House and Pentagon told Dennis Blair to continue to supporting the militia at that time, and he instead didn't follow their orders and emboldened them to continue their massacres at the time. And therefore, Therefore, Alan Nairn and East Timor Action Network, which has a website, I believe it's etan.org, they're having asking everyone to demand that Dennis Blair not be put as head of intelligence.
Nora, thank you for informing me about that. I appreciate it. I tell you, we have the smartest listeners in the world on this program.
Well, I have a lot of time to listen to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report, and, of course, Tom Hartman, which was chosen. I heard, congratulations, I heard under some, I'm not sure of what website.
The Liberal Talk Radio blog, LT. Well, number two, actually. Mike Malloy was number one.
Number two, Tom Hartman. I totally agree. You two are the top two. And along with what you said, I told Amy Goodman when I met her that you said she was that you had one time said she was the best radio host. And thank you so much. She has filled,
in my opinion, she has filled Walter Cronkite's shoes. She's doing news, not commentary. I do commentary, not news. But she is absolutely brilliant. Nora, thank you very much for the comment and for the information. And obviously, I need to do a little homework here. I will, and you will hear about that topic again. Alan in New York City. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air.
Am I on?
You are.
Hi, Tom. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. I just wanted to say that I'm in New York City, and before the holidays, I was in Penn Station in the first class lounge at Amtrak. and heard three Citibank executives talking and complaining that this year their bonus was only 1M and that the company was cheap. They were coming home from the holiday party. Where,
These poor guys, you know, they can only have one Maserati between the three of them.
And now on top of it, they had their girls with them. The kids had bags upon bags of very high-end merchandise from Fifth Avenue toy stores and the like, and that was donated to the children of the executives. What we're really looking at here, sadly, is the new American nobility, you know?
Well, and it's really been since Reagan. I mean, Reagan even changed the nature of the inaugural balls and you know, just elevated wealth and... Alan, thanks a lot for the call and for sharing that with us. It is, let me remind our listeners, it falls into the category of hearsay and is not necessarily an indictment of the company or the people. But you know, it is the kind of, I mean, we know. These guys, these you know, I've read you this list, the TARP recipients, they're getting hundreds of billions, hundreds of millions, and their executives are doing just fine, thank you very much. And even when they say, oh, I'll just take a $1 compensation, I guarantee you their stock packages are still there, their housing allowance is still there, their mansion is still there, their corporate jet is still there, all that stuff. But when the automakers come to Washington, D.C., it's, how much are you going to pay those auto workers? I understand you're hiring people now at $14.70 an hour. Isn't that a little excessive? I mean, it is absolutely tragic. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Patrick in Portland. Hey, Patrick.
How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Harry Reid, you know, for the past 8 years, they've been, yes, Mr. Republican, no, Mr. Republican, and just taking what the Republicans dish out to them, and now they pick this topic to decide to grow a backbone.
I know. It's bizarre.
It sounds like to me that the state of Arizona needs to elect a couple of two new representatives.
Well, that would be Nevada, actually.
Nevada? Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, Harry's
from
there.
Thank you for correcting me on that.
Yeah.
But there's just something smells afoul here.
I think Harry Reid is trying to be his own man. He's trying to be tough, and he's got a long hill to climb. I mean, I'll tell you, Patrick, thanks for the call. I made the joke on the morning show. Somebody needs to be standing outside the governor's mansion in California watching the mail. And when that package arrives every month with the steroids for Arnold from Mexico, they need to snatch that thing and, you know, load up a syringe and go looking for Harry. Because I think he needs a little testosterone. Max in Burbank. Hey, Max, we got a minute before the break. What's up?
Oh, hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You had mentioned that you felt that there were, and full disclosure, I don't know your complete position on the whole situation with Israel and Hamas right now, but I've heard certain things, and so I kind of have an idea. But you just mentioned with a caller a few minutes ago that there are other things that Israel could be doing that would be much better for Israel in the long run and the situation as a whole. But my question to you is, because I'm very closely, you know, following the situation, is I would like to know what those things are, because frankly, I don't see it.
What they should have done, here's what should have happened, and frankly, we should have been playing a leadership role in this. I think we can place most of the blame for this at the foot of George W. Bush. When Hamas was elected in 2005, 2006 in Gaza, we should have gone in and done what we also should have done in Afghanistan and in Iraq, is we should have been building hospitals, we should have been building schools, we should have been helping them make the same transition that we helped the PLO make from a terrorist organization and a bunch of crazies into a group that is now part of the rest of the world. And we should have said, here's the deal. You know, we will help you out like crazy and make it work for you. But we didn't. And by not doing that... Max, stick around just a second. Hang on here. We got to take a break.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh boy, you've been robbed. Yep, somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Throughout history, we have looked to the stars for inspiration and hope. In these extraordinary times, you can give the gift of inspiration and hope. Name a star after someone. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will name a star after anyone you wish to inspire and send them a beautiful personalized gift. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com and give the gift of hope.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KPOJ. 620KPOJ.com.
A sore throat can ruin a family outing, but my kids know I have the touch that can make it better. It's called the Chloraseptic Touch.
Now moms have new Chloraseptic Maximum Strength Liquid Lozenges with the Liquid Medicine Center. You get the strongest medicine available without a prescription for fast relief that starts the moment Chloraseptic Max touches your throat. Plus, it coats to protect.
When they feel better, we all enjoy ourselves.
New Chloraseptic Maximum Strength Liquid Lozenges. One touch relief. The Chloraseptic Touch. Use as directed.
This is the Mortgage Moment, and I'm here with Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity Mortgage. Hayes, the economy's a mess. Do you have any positive financial news?
Definitely. Thanks to Uncle Sam's bold action, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive. As low as, are you ready for this?
What?
5% flat, with an APR of 5.25. These are the lowest rates we've seen in 50 years.
Yeah, but will this really kickstart the economy?
The Fed didn't mince words. Their explicit goal is to push mortgage rates down to a level that stimulates home buying and refinancing activity.
So who will this truly help?
Listen, virtually every homeowner can save money with rates as low as 5% and an APR of 5.25. So pull the trigger and lock in right now, because these rates could be gone in the blink of an eye. At a time when you need it most, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money. So make one simple call to 718-1000 today. 503-718-1000.
License number ML3256.
All right, let's see. I'd half a cup of milk and two eggs. Oh, I better check the fridge. I may be out of eggs.
Well, hi there. I'm your local GEICO representative.
What are you doing in my refrigerator?
Well, for starters, I'm catching pneumonia. Anyway, I'm located right here in town, so if you ever need help saving money on car insurance or if you have questions about your policy, I'm always close by.
You look pretty chilly.
Well, at least frostbite hasn't set in yet. By the way, I ate one of those hot peppers you had in here. That darn thing's giving me acid reflux.
Those weren't peppers.
If you ever need help saving money on car insurance, have questions about your policy, or just want a free rate quote, your local GEICO representative is always close by.
Your local GEICO office can help you insure more than just your car. They can help you with motorcycle, boat, homeowners, renters, and other insurance products. For a free quote, call 503-794-0901. That's 503-794-0901. Or visit your local GEICO office at 13031 Southeast 84th Avenue in Clackamas.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Ain't no use in calling out my name now, like you never done before. Ain't no use in calling out my name. I can't hear you anymore. I'm walking and I'm thinking, going down this road. I once loved a woman, a child I'm told. I gave her my heart, but she wanted my soul. But don't think twice, it's all right.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. And I just want to wrap up this conversation with Max real quickly, and then Dean Baker is going to join us. Max, the point that I was making is that I am pro-Israel and I am pro-peace. I am pro-Palestinian and I am pro-peace. And military action, particularly overwhelming military action like Israel is engaged in and like we did in both Afghanistan and Iraq, is, in my opinion, a statement of failure of all other processes processes that should have preceded them. And frankly, I don't think that those processes did precede them the way they should have in Afghanistan, in Iraq, or in this case, in Gaza.
Okay, fair enough. Look, I'm pro-peace, I'm pro-Israel, and I think that it's a tragedy that's going on now. I mean, and I'm not bellicose enough to say that his innocents are not being killed. Obviously, they are. However, at the same time, you know, I don't, and now, of course, I'm not privy to all the details of what happened immediately after the election of Hamas, but, you know,
what happened was they basically were isolated, that the response of the United States and Israel to the election of Hamas, after we pushed to have those elections, and we should have been able to predict what would have happened, because Hamas was in there and they were feeding people and they were running the equivalent of a Social Security program and they were building schools and they were doing the things that, frankly, we should have been doing. And so people say, hey, who are you going to vote for? You're going to vote for the people who are supporting you. And so they elected Hamas. And so what we did is we basically said, okay, we're going to strangle you guys. You know, we're going to cut off the air. We're going to cut off commerce. We're going to kill all your small businesses and try and turn the people against Hamas. And instead, predictably, what it did is it caused many of the people to say, you know, we hate the people who are strangling us more than we hate the people who are the crazies among us. And
so are you saying that we should have been in, that the United States should have been in there before the election of Hamas and doing all these
absolutely
projects?
Absolutely. All along, we should have been working with the Palestinians. You want to have a viable Palestinian state, it's going to take some help. You can't have a democracy when a significant minority or a majority of the people don't have something close to a middle-class lifestyle. You simply can't have a functioning democracy, and people will always vote for the autocrat. They'll always vote for the crazies when they perceive their own life and safety and food supply to be at risk. And so, you know, the first thing to do is to build the economic infrastructure, and then you can build the political infrastructure. And nobody did that homework. We didn't do that homework. And frankly, it was our responsibility, not Israel's. And our being the world community and the United States being at the head of that. And we didn't do that homework, and this is the result of it. And Israel's paying the price, and the Palestinians are paying the price. And as I said, I lay most of this at the feet of George W. Bush. Max, I got to move along, but thank you for the call.
Okay.
We'll come back to the topic. We've devoted several hours of this show over the last 4 or 5 days to this topic. We'll come back to it. Dean Baker's with us, the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, one of my favorite writers and economists. And Dean, you got a couple of great pieces out here. The economy is collapsing. Don't tell Congress, over at HuffPo. And free market myth, regulation is everywhere. Let's choose who benefits, from the Boston Review and Common Dreams. Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
It is always great having you with us. What, in your mind, you say the economy is collapsing, don't tell Congress. What do you mean?
Well, we're seeing every single day there's more bad news coming out. Business is going bankrupt, job losses amplifying, and the unemployment rate rising, and Congress hasn't done anything. And it's been sort of frustrating. Obviously,
well, they've given $300 billion to mostly millionaires and billionaires.
Yeah, well, we've had the bailouts of Wall Street. They did, to their credit, they did something to keep the auto industry from collapsing completely. But actually, that wasn't even Congress. President Bush, to his credit, took the initiative. Congress couldn't find its inability to do that. But we know we have this transition period, but that's not an excuse for inaction. And there's some things that I would think, maybe I'll be proven wrong on this, but I would have thought that even you could have gotten President Bush to sign off on some aid to state and local governments. It doesn't have to be President Obama's stimulus package, but get something there. You know, where I live here in D.C., I get to read about what D.C.'s cutting, what Maryland's cutting, what Virginia's cutting, and many of those cuts shouldn't take place. They won't be necessary.
But this is the same George Bush who didn't even want to put money into New Orleans after Katrina.
Well, you know, take your chances. I mean, it seems to me it would have been worth their while, whether it be President Obama or Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Reid, they, you know, sit down with him and say, is there something you'd agree to? And if he says no, well, then you tell the country, we'd love to get, you know, do something here, but we're going to have to wait until President Obama takes office.
I agree. In fact, I'd take it a step farther, and I'd say that the Democrats should have put together a package, they should have brought it to the floor, and when Bush said, no, we won't have that, or when the Republicans threatened to filibuster, Harry Reid should have stood up and said, okay, fine. You want a filibuster, you can have a filibuster. Get your cots, order the pizza. We'll get a bucket for you to pee in so you don't have to leave the floor, you know, like in the old days, the way Strom Thurmond used to do it, and you guys can have your damn filibuster.
Well, and also, people should know if that's a position of the Republican Party, because we're just talking about money to state and local governments so they don't have to lay people off. They're doing that now. And
yep.
If that's their position, then fine. They should be going on record that that's their position. We'd rather see them lay people off, cut back services that people need, and, you know, for whatever reason, we think it's more important not to let the legislation go through. Let them go on record. But as it is, we haven't seen anything brought forward.
Right. Well, what are your thoughts? We have 45 seconds here, Dean. What are your thoughts on what is being talked about as the stimulus from the Obama administration?
Well, I'm glad they're talking about something, but I'm just worried that they're being too timid. President Obama said that he wants to have 80 votes, or there's that talk. I shouldn't attribute that to him. Maybe that's just a leak that's not true. And my view is we need jobs more than we need 80 votes. And I just don't know how you're going to tell people that we had to water down the stimulus package. We aren't getting them jobs because we want 80 votes in the Senate. We'd love to see it be bipartisan, but first and foremost, we need jobs and growth.
And I think it's crazy to rely on tax cuts to do anything. Over the short term, it's a stimulus. Over the long term, the market will, you know, pay will readjust for, you know, when taxes on working people go up, wages go up. When taxes go down, wages go down. You know, over time, it's just this is not the way to do it. The way to do it is to have better pay for jobs. You know, raise the minimum wage, for example.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the time will tell. Dean Baker, Dean, your favorite website, CEPR.net.
CEPR.net, that's right.
Okay, great. The Center for Economic and Policy Research, CEPR.net. Check it out and read all the brilliant writings of Dean Baker, one of the best guys out there writing. Thanks, Dean, for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Coming up next, Adam Michelson of Countrywide Home Loans.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club. Providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, let's see, the CEO of Girls Gone Wild, Joe Francis, and the publisher of Hustler Magazine, Larry Flint, petitioning the newly convened 111th Congress for a bailout. Industry leaders Flint and Francis sent a joint request to Congress asking for $5 billion in federal assistance, quote, just to see us through hard times, Francis said. Congress seems willing to shore up our nation's most important businesses. We feel we deserve the same consideration. In difficult economic times, Americans turn to entertainment for relief. More and more the kind of entertainment they want is adult entertainment. But according to Flint, the recession has acted like a national cold shower. He says people are too depressed to be sexually active. This is very unhealthy as a nation. Americans can do without cars, but they cannot do without sex. In particular, if we want there to still be an America 30, 40, 50 years from now. So, oh, man. This all seems to, in many ways, track back to the implosion of the housing market, which arguably tracks back to the explosion of the housing bubble, which many suggest tracks back to decisions made in the early 1980s by Alan Greenspan that have to do with credit, and decisions made in 1999 by Phil Graham and others in Congress. But all of that aside, or maybe all of that right at the front, Adam Michelson is with us. He's the author of a new book, The Foreclosure of America, The Inside Story of the Rise and Fall of Countrywide Home Loans, The Mortgage Crisis and the Default in the American Dream. He was the senior marketing VP at Countrywide, and Countrywide, the largest of these subprime lenders, later acquired by Bank of America, which gave B of A a rather bad case of indigestion. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, what happened?
Well, you know, the story has gotten so overwhelming and so complex that I wanted to tell the last missing piece of the history that could have been part of the housing crisis as it was being born through the first insider's view from inside the hallways and conference rooms at Countrywide as the crisis was actually being born.
Okay. And you talk in your book a fair amount about Angelo Mozzillo.
Yeah.
And, you know, he seemed lost. The CEO of my employer, one of the largest companies in America, Also, my boss's boss stepped out of the black limo with darkened windows. And, you know, anyhow, it almost seems like you've got this love-hate relationship with this guy.
Well, you know, my story, I think, was America's story. I entered the company completely drunk with the possibility of wealth and growth and prosperity, and the streets were paved with gold during that boom time. And as a corporate executive and a marketing executive, he was like Mickey Mantle to us. You know, it was like literally having Walt Disney walk through the halls and put his hand on your shoulder and tell you that you were doing a great job. So for a time, you know, it's about American idol worship. But frankly, through the story, I too tipped over into overconfidence and hubris, eventually helplessness and panic and horror at what was actually could happen to the country, eventually leading to disillusionment, which I think the whole country is feeling right now.
Yeah. To what extent, I mean, you know, it's really interesting, the hearings that were held in Congress in 1932 and 1933-34, I'm forgetting the name of the guy who conducted them. He's a rather obscure congressman, a regulator that Roosevelt had put into place, really took down the robber barons of the age. I mean, the bankers during the Roaring Twenties, particularly people who were members of the House of Morgan or who had seats in the New York Exchange, if they said virtually anything about anything, you know, about fashion even, it was front pages in the newspapers. Everybody was all over it. They were the gods and demigods of the age. And it seems like, and then, you know, when they started investigating, they found out that these people had feet of clay, that they didn't really know what was going on, or when they did, they were being opportunists. You know, some of them were just plain old out and right greedy sons of, you know, whatever, you know, sociopaths for all practical purposes. Others were just caught up in it and, you know, thought it would last forever. Gee, this is great. Didn't really even understand economics well enough to see that they were in the middle of a bubble. Where in your opinion, and I realize you have a certain amount of self-interest in telling this story, but Adam Michelson, where was Mozilla? Where was Countrywide in that spectrum of that I just laid out?
Well, you know, one of the key themes of the book is to make sure that history remembers, you know, what was the true intent of the mission. I can remember when the story exploded about a year and a half ago. And immediately all the corporations were evil and all the banks were out to get everybody. And I remember thinking, wait a minute, that's not what we felt at all. I was in the room, and I'm telling you, we honestly believed in the good that we were doing for America. We honestly believed in the passion of helping every American, especially underprivileged Americans.
Then why would you promote a mortgage that after 3 or 5 years automatically jacks up to the point where it's going to blow up in somebody's face?
Well, no person, no broker, no salesperson can ever predict what rates are going to be X years ahead of time, just like we can't predict today what rates are going to be 3 years from now.
But why would you sell a mortgage that even had the potential to do that if you were really concerned about the people?
Well, it's a fine line between, in some cases, offering them an adjustable rate mortgage was the only way that they could get into a house.
Then shouldn't you say to them, sorry, you know, we're going to go back to the way that we've done it since the Great Depression, and we're not going to put you in this house? I mean, you know, you're going to have to rent for a little while longer?
Well, this is the quandary. You know, right now we're in typical overcorrection where you can't even get a loan unless you have an 800 FICO and you're putting down 50%.
As a consequence of what you guys were doing back in the day. I mean, when we look at when you see that 60% of people who had subprime loans actually qualified for prime loans, over 90% of people in minority areas who qualified for full prime loans were sold subprime loans by companies like Countrywide. You have to say, you know, there's some people who are not actually behaving in the public interest.
Well, I think your point is very well taken, and obviously it's going to take years for this story to bake in history and to figure out what exactly happened. But as I say in the book, I worked in the Countrywide prime side of it. We had a whole other division that focused on subprime. So my goal was to sell the concept of home ownership for first-time homeowners who were prime, to let people know who had equity in their homes, what they could do with the money if they chose to take it out. And I stress that, if they freely chose to take it out. You know, no one has ever been forced to take money in this country, although I would argue that you're right to some extent. We are all equally culpable in this mess. Every corporation who overlended, every consumer who overconsumed, every government regulator who underregulated, and frankly, even in the media. People forget very quickly how we were bombarded with TV shows about getting rich quick and flipping houses.
Yeah, flip this house.
It was mania. It was
no, I agree with you, you know, broadly on that, but I would think that in the banking business, at the very least, that, you know, while the average American can't be expected to know, to understand the nuance of what happened in the 20s and the 30s.
Right.
Because what we're seeing is an exact replay of that. I mean, go back and read John Kenneth Galbraith's book. He wrote it in 1955. He most recently re-updated it before he died in 1997. It's called The Great Crash, 1929.
Yeah.
And it's a companion piece to your book, Adam. I mean, it's incredible. And the lessons were there. And while the average American can, I think, be forgiven for not realizing that we were in a bubble or understanding macroeconomics or even the microeconomic, you know, the lending end of it, I don't understand how bankers can be forgiven for not understanding what their own industry, how their own industry had essentially raped this country 80 years prior.
Well, banks have two goals, not only to return value to shareholders and help their customers, but to also minimize risk. So, I think it's common sense that no bank in their right mind would have knowingly offered a loan to someone that they absolutely knew would not be repaid.
But the majority of these loans were being sold by companies that weren't functionally banks, you know, countrywide among them. You guys were reselling the loans as soon as you got them.
Well, that's how the marketplace was constructed.
Well, that's how it was constructed as a result of the lobbying of your industry. It's not the way that the marketplace was constructed before 1997.
Well, you know, you're bringing up a much larger issue, which hopefully will elevate the debate in this country. Where does the responsibility of corporations end and the responsibility of consumer choice begin? And it's a very fuzzy gray area. I mean, I think that the same rush to judgment and thoughtless discourse that got us into this mess in the first place is actually the same thoughtless, rash rush to blaming that is occurring now. I don't disagree with you. Corporations are as equally culpable in all this as everyone who took out a loan who knew they couldn't repay it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't see any equality at all there. The average consumer is not the one who went to Washington, D.C., greased the palms to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars of legislators to change the rules so that they can make more money. But people can read your book and make up their own mind. The Foreclosure of America is the book. Adam Michelson, the author, the inside story of the rise and fall of countrywide home loans. Adam, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Provider and licensing details are available.
The other day I was thinking,
this year I'm going to lose weight, get in shape, spend more time with family, get out of debt.
Let's move that to the top of the list. To make getting out of debt happen, I'm calling for CareOne Credit Counseling Services. A CareOne agent will work with my creditors to lower my monthly payments. That can save thousands of dollars in fees and interest payments. And I'll make one lower monthly payment instead of the dozens I make now. CareOne agencies have helped over 4 million people get out of debt. And now it's my turn, my year.
Call 800-350-6564, 800-350-6564, for a free consultation and find out how you can lower your monthly payments up to 70%. One 15-minute phone call to a CareOne agent can change your life. 800-350-6564, 800-350-6564.
CareOne for you.
AM 620 KPOJ conducts various contests weekdays and weekends at various times, offering various prizes to its listeners. By participating in a KPOJ contest, you're agreeing to be bound by the official contest rules for the contest. No purchase necessary. Participants and winners must be U.S. residents, at least 18 years old, and may only enter one time unless otherwise stated in the complete official contest rules. Only one prize per household for any contest within a 30-day period. For complete contest rules, visit the main office of this station during regular business hours.
And now, another reason to switch to Geico.
Geico is over 70 years old. Now, most of us don't go around bragging about how old we are, especially on the radio. But at Geico, they're proud of their age. It means they can deliver the expertise and reliability that only comes with years of experience. Over 70 and proud of it, that's Geico. How old am I? I'll tell you later, you know, when I'm off the radio.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
With Medicare Part D, you'll pay about the same copay anywhere. No wonder seniors are choosing America's most trusted pharmacy, Walgreens. There's no more shopping around for price, so join the millions by transferring your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just bring in your bottles and they'll do the rest. Not only will you get great service and convenience at Walgreens, you'll also feel safer knowing you have just one pharmacy helping you manage all your medicines. Walgreens accepts most Medicare Part D plans.
Now at Staples. Save big on everything your office needs with Staples Dollar Deals, like writing pads, Sharpies, and binder clips. Dollar pricing valid. In-store only. 1409 through 11009. Limit supply.
Invest in the ultimate storm chaser package at Honest One Auto Care for half price. This Thursday, go to 620kpoj.com and get an oil change, tire rotation, and alignment from Honest One Auto Care for only $60. Brought to you by Honest One Auto Care and 620kpoj.com.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you in the no boring zone. Well, it looks like they're going after a top Richardson aide now, a chief aide to Bill Richardson. It's interesting the conspiracy stories that get floated around this stuff, that Bill Richardson had betrayed Bill Clinton. So, boom, he gets bounced out of the Obama administration, or maybe not. I don't know. I'm not ready to go there. And Leon Panetta, good buddy of the Clinton administration, he gets head of the CIA. Actually, I think Leon Panetta is a good choice. So we'll see. Now Harry Reid's office is saying that the story that the AP is reporting, that the Democrats in the Senate are going to go along with seating Roland Burris, is wrong. At the same time, Barack Obama just had a press conference, and he did not reiterate his opposition to Burris being seated, but instead said, if the guy gets a seat, I'll work with him. So, you know, like I said, you know, Harry, you never should have picked that fight. You pick fights you can win. And by the way, you could have picked a lot of fights with the Republicans, and you could have won a lot of them over the last few years. But instead, for some reason, Harry Reid is saying that he's going to pick fights with Barack Obama. Well, he's going to be his own man with regard to Barack Obama. I don't know. The whole thing baffles me. A government spokesman said today, this from the Think Fast summary over at Think Progress, that Israel welcomes a proposal from France and Egypt to end the fighting in Gaza. France and Egypt? This is how incredibly, insanely, pathetically incompetent the Bush administration is, that France and Egypt are stepping in to solve a problem that we have played a large part in creating, frankly, over the years. Earlier this morning, Israel briefly suspended its fighting for 3 hours to permit humanitarian relief goods to reach the beleaguered population. A good step, but, man, it's got to go so much farther. The war on Eric Holder has already begun. We've been hearing this for some time now. The Republicans, particularly in the Senate, are absolutely hysterical about Eric Holder. I am of the opinion that the reason why is because they know that Eric Holder is one of the people who has the highest probability of actually enforcing the law and actually going after people who broke the law during the Bush crime years. During the 8 years of this criminal enterprise known as the Bush administration operating the White House. That he may be able to track back where, you know, what did Mike Connell do before his plane crashed a week or two with all those millions of missing White House emails? Which, frankly, I think have them even more terrified than you know, any of the other Rove, you know, the Don Siegelman stuff is pretty bad, too. But those missing emails, that's a biggie. Or what about those votes from Ohio on the eve of the election in 2004 that Mike Connell was retabulating on his server in Tennessee? Well, Mike is dead now. We'll never know. But I think that Eric Holder holds some promise as somebody who may actually look into some of this stuff. Hopefully some of our members of Congress will do the same. And as such, and if so, you've got a bunch of Republicans who are just scared, fill in the blank. So here, Arlen Specter, the friendly face of the Republican attack machine, Arlen Single Bullet Specter, the guy who came up with the single bullet theory back when he was a lawyer for the House Select Committee on Assassinations. Arlen Specter comes out and calls into question the issue of Eric Holder's character. Sometimes, he says, it's more important for the attorney general to have the stature and the courage to say no instead of to say yes. He's referring, of course, to the Mark Rich pardon. At least I'm assuming. Further inquiry is warranted on the issue of Mr. Holder's independence to follow the facts without respect to political bias. Right. This is one that I hope Obama really hangs tight on, and I hope that Harry Reid and the Democrats in the Senate hold tight on. They may not. Who knows? Sanjay Gupta. Back to Sanjay Gupta as the Surgeon General. It hasn't been officially announced. It's looking pretty likely. And I got an email here from G. Okay. Hey, Sanjay Gupta will be great for several reasons. First, he'll be able to relate to young people better than probably any Surgeon General in the past. Good point. He's not, you know, like Everett Koop, you know, some incredible old fart with a white beard who looks like the guy from the Quaker Oats box. And secondly, G writes, South Asians are a rapidly growing yet relatively small pool of new voters, both naturalized and U.S.-born. Appointing him to the administration is one way to create loyalty to the Democratic Party, which will also dilute the appeal of Bobby Jindal to South Asian Americans. That's an interesting political take on it that I hadn't considered, although I really think that positions like attorney general should be done based on their merits. And I think we want somebody who thinks that national health care, particularly single payer, is a great idea.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Right here on the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Welcome back. Well, I'll tell you, I confess, I'm a slob. About once every 6 months or so. Louise gets 3 or 4 cups of coffee in her and comes charging into my office. This happened a week and a half ago before her mother and brother came to visit, and says, "You are going to clean up your office." And a frenzy commences. But, I'll tell you, if you're looking on the Tom Vision, you can probably see, I have piles of piles. I don't have a filing system. I have a piling system. But the opposite end of that spectrum is a little excessive cleaning. And this 55-year-old woman, we're not going to give her name, but Ogden, Utah, the police were called because this woman had not shown up in 24 hours, the Salt Lake Tribune reporting, and it's a Tuesday edition. She hadn't been heard from her. Her family freaked out. 30 hours they hadn't heard from her. So they call 911. They come out. They look around the house, and they discover that she was so aggressively vacuuming that she fell into one of the heating vents in the house as she was trying to clean it, got stuck under the floor, and was never seen again. Well, actually, was seen again 30 hours later, suffering cuts and abrasions. I'm telling you, there are dangers in being too clean. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. George in East Hampton, Massachusetts, listening to WHMP. Hey, George, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I understand that you don't like to be told, but you are brilliant, and I can't remember yesterday, and your recall is amazing.
Well, I can't remember a lot of yesterday either, George.
You astound me.
So what's up?
Anyway, I tuned in just when your guest was saying that nobody can get a loan without an 800 credit score and without 50% down. Well, it's just not true. One of my relatives just got a loan in the high 100, almost 200,000, and their credit score is like 650 or 640 or something. And they got the loan like with no problem at all.
But what were the terms of the loan? Was it a gotcha loan or was it a real loan?
It's a mortgage. I mean, and they're selling it immediately to Wells Fargo. I know that. It's like it's just amazing. And the job that he just got, he got a month ago.
Yeah, amazing. So the beat goes on, huh, George?
The beat goes on.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot for the heads up. That's amazing. Frank in L.A. Hey, Frank.
Yeah, your guest said that this was not predictable, but the Bush administration resurrected Reagan economics, and Arthur Laffer, I'm still laughing at, economic theories, and they failed under Reagan. So why would you resurrect a failing economic policy?
I know these guys still believe this stuff. We had Arthur Laffer on this show about 2 months ago, and he's coming on, and he's trying to explain this thing, and I'm like, this makes no sense. This is crazy. It didn't work under Reagan. It's not going to work under Bush. It's never going to work. It never did work. What, you think you can reinvent economics after 7,000 years of trial and error? It's like, it's
that's
nuts.
Right. I mean, they're nickel and diming us to death. It is amounting to trillions of dollars. And the fact is that under Reagan, look at I think there was like 10 million home foreclosures. There were like 1,700 savings and loans, and about 500 banks went under, and like about 10 million personal bankruptcies. So how do they expect that the economic policy of Ronald Reagan and Calvin Coolidge is going to work under Bush?
Yeah, no, and it didn't, and it won't, and this is, and thank you for the call, and this is where Obama needs to absolutely repudiate this and start doing things that do work, which means raising wages and getting more disposable income, not just over the short term with a quickie tax cut or a rebate, but actually raising wages. Pass the Employee Free Choice Act. Strengthen the rights of workers in the workplace. Increase the tax, the income tax, on millionaires. Roll back the Reagan tax cuts. To hell with the Bush tax cuts. Roll back the Reagan tax cuts. You want industrial growth in the United States like we had from 1940 to 1980? We had that because we had a 74 to 91% top income tax rate on people making more than $3 million a year. And why did that stimulate the economy? Why did that build the economy? Because people making more than $3 million a year, at that point, they say, if I take more money out of this company and put it in my own pocket, I'm going to pay 70% income tax on it. That's crazy. I think I'll leave the money in the company and buy new equipment. I think I'll leave the money in the company and build a new factory. I think I'll leave the money in the company and pay my employees a little better wage so we have less turnover, which, by the way, is very expensive to companies, the turnover, and so we can actually run this business in a more competent and coherent fashion. This is not rocket science. All you have to do is look at history. But you've got a whole, you know, all these right-wing think tanks out there, you know, spreading these very toxic to democracy, these destructive of democracy, conservative memes, thought viruses of, oh, you know, you increase taxes, you slow down economic activity. I'm sorry, not true. Find one instance. You cannot find an instance in history where increasing taxes slowed down economic activity. In fact, when Clinton raised taxes, it boosted economic activity. James in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hey, James, what's up?
Hi, I'm just feeling so bad about all this violence in the Gaza Strip. And I think we saw a similar situation with Sarajevo, in which you have two groups of people, two different religions. You have histories of atrocities going back hundreds, if not thousands of years. And in the end, you have a large city surrounded by a modern military army, and the tanks and planes and everything are just blasting away at people who can't get out of the situation. And I just feel horrible about this.
The parallels are way too close for comfort. I agree with you, James. And it's one of the reasons why we, you know, the Bush laissez-faire attitude of, oh, we'll just keep hands off and we'll let these guys resolve this, when, you know, there is not the means nor the will on both sides. And both sides, there are problems on both sides. Let's acknowledge that to resolve it. It needs an intervention.
And if there's a fight in the bar, you don't debate who started the fight. End the fight first, and then you sort things out.
That's right. You step in between the parties, and you say, okay, we're gonna sit down and work this thing out. You're absolutely right, James. Thanks for the call. Well, enough said. Tom in Oceanside, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Tom.
How you doing, Tom?
Just great.
I just had a quick comment about how Roosevelt got us out of our woes, and I don't see why. I hope that Obama thinks similarly and start like a new I think it was called WPO.
Yeah, WPA. Works Progress Administration, as I recall.
Right, and start putting solar panels on every roof in this country.
Yep.
It would employ everyone. It would create factory jobs. And also, before you had the greedy guy, you had an economist on.
Yeah.
And he was
actually a marketer. The guy who wrote the book, Alan Michelson, was the vice president of marketing with Countrywide. Yeah.
Yeah, and he mentioned, I thought it was him that mentioned, you know, let the Republicans filibuster. And I'll repeat it again.
Oh, that was Dean Baker. Before. Yeah. Yeah, no, that has been my mantra for years now. You know, every time the Republicans say, we're going to filibuster this, you know, Harry Reid, you know, they have to pull out the smelling salts to get him back up off the floor. And yeah, he just goes into a full-blown faint. And as Bernie Sanders has said on this show over and over and over again, you know, let them have their damn filibuster. Let them show America how toxic and sick and twisted and weird they are. Let them tell America how much they hate the working people. Let them have their filibuster.
That was one thing I was kind of disappointed where Clinton was elected Secretary of State. I was hoping that she would take over Harry Reid's job.
I was, too. Apparently the Senate doesn't work that. I mean, I was the one-man lobbying effort for that, as you recall, for a half a year. I was saying, you know, as soon as she was out of the running and it was Obama, I was like, you know, this woman needs to replace Harry Reid because she knows how to take names and kick ass. And that's what you need in a Senate majority leader. But the Senate, the way the Senate works is everything is based on seniority. Everything is slow. Everything's methodical. And Hillary Clinton would have had to be there for another 20 years before she would have been functionally eligible to be the Senate Majority Leader. So, you know, it's a weird institution, as I've been learning, as we've all been learning, listening to Bernie Sanders describe this thing over the last year. But thanks for the call, and your point is well made. Scott in Fresno. Hey, Scott, got a minute before the break. What's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. I was just wondering about this thing with Obama's birth certificate.
It's a joke. It's a joke, Scott.
Yeah, I know. The fellow employees saying that there's three states that are going to file lawsuits and that he had attended a Filipino school and couldn't attend a Filipino school unless you were a native of Philippines, and that he couldn't hold dual citizenship.
First of all, it wasn't the Philippines. It was Indonesia, and anybody can go to those schools. And actually, his dad was Indonesian. His second father, his wife remarried, you will recall, and went to Indonesia with her husband, and he went to school there. And then he came back to Hawaii and was raised by his grandparents in Hawaii after that. And then eventually his mom came home when he was in his early teens or late preteens. But the point is that it's a joke. These are the Swift Boat crazies. These are the Jerome Corsi, Ann Coulter crazies of the world. And anybody in the United States can file any lawsuit for pretty much any purpose. That doesn't mean that it has any validity or any meaning or any significance. This is just fodder for the crazies. I don't know a better word for it, particularly the ones, the B and C list on right-wing talk radio. The right-wing hosts all across the country that most people have never heard of. They're all going off on this thing. It's pathetic. Come on, there's serious work that needs to be done. Let's get it done.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
You ever have one of those days where everything goes right? First, I get the best parking space at work. Tonight, I have a date with the very lovely Rachel. And today, I gave a killer presentation in Sydney, finalized a contract in London, and demoed our new product in Boston. Online, from my desk, with WebEx. WebEx lets me take meetings and give presentations from my desk. I just talk to clients on the phone, and they watch what's happening on my desktop from their desktop. So I can travel the world and still be here for my date tonight with Rachel.
Travel less, meet online. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code BLUE to get a free trial and a free webcam, too. Remember that code, BLUE, to qualify for the free webcam. WebEx, now part of Cisco, and used by more than 5.5 million people every month. Give it a try. Free. Go to WebEx.com and enter the promo code BLUE. WEBEX.com. Free webcams available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog. What name it could be?
Promise. Because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater.
How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw. I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wolfson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
I'm Tom Dwyer, 230-2300. I thought that Oregon got all its electricity from hydroelectric. Well, about 60% of our electricity is hydro, but the rest comes from dirty coal plants like those in nearby Boardman and Centralia. The Boardman plant, 150 miles east of Portland, generates 20% of PGE's power. It's the largest stationary source of greenhouse gases in Oregon, contributing to acid rain in the Gorge and on Mount Hood, and impacting us from Hell's Canyon to Mount Rainier. Please help me support the Bonneville Environmental Foundation in funding green power here and now with the Tom Dwyer Automotive Services Carbon Neutral Program. Use the link at tomdwyer.com, enter the promo code KPOJ, get a 50% discount, and join. Your car will be carbon neutral, you'll receive 10% off labor, and other offers that will save you over $350. If you're a current client or wanted to try us, then please check this out. I'm counting on you to help build the wind and solar power we need in Oregon today. I don't want to burn coal to power my house or my next car. Keeping our vehicles operating at their best. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, 230-2300. And please visit tomdwyer.com.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the many perks for our listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers. And here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of more than $600. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts only for KPOJ listeners and only at Floor Trends Northwest in Selwood.
Hey, Tom Hartman here to talk to you about Hawthorne Fish House's new $5.95 cash lunch menu. Choose from six delicious combos like fried cod or chicken strips with fries and coleslaw, or warm up with a bowl of chowder and a salad. Combos also include your choice of soda, lemonade, tea, coffee, or juice, all for just $5.95. What are you waiting for? Offer valid weekdays between 11 to 3 only at Hawthorne Fish House when paying with cash. And be sure to check out their gluten-free menu available at both Hawthorne Fish House Southeast and Corbett Fish House Southwest.
Hey, we should go. Oh, come on. We got plenty of time.
Come on.
I try to talk him out of it, you talk him into it. It's the same thing all the time.
Why are you so negative?
Gambling can put you at odds with yourself.
Whoa, we can't afford that. Don't quit now. We're just about to win. It's okay. We'll win it back.
Oh, I see where this when you play, set a time limit and stick to a budget. Don't let the game play you. Call 877-MY-LIMIT or log on to OregonLotteryHelp.org.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the place where progressives come to party. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And Jeff in Shreveport, Louisiana. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Hey, you mentioned that the Democrats fold over on filibusters.
They did over 80 times last year.
Yes, and I think there's a very cynical reason why. It's because they believe that we're so stupid that if the Republicans made their arguments, people might believe them.
I sure hope you're wrong, Jeff. I think the reason why, I mean, you know, Harry Reid and the bunch who go along with this is, again, Bernie Sanders has done a good job of educating us about this. Their rationale is they've got important things to do. They wanted to raise the minimum wage. They wanted to strengthen the EPA. They wanted to, you know, the long list of legislative achievements that they all hope will remember, which, frankly, I can't remember even right now. They wanted to get these things done. And when a filibuster happens, it shuts down the Senate. It just shuts it down. And the point that I've made and that Bernie makes is, okay, if the Republicans are going to threaten a filibuster, let them start their filibuster on Thursday afternoon, because typically the Senate closes on Thursday afternoon so that the members can go home on Friday and do town halls and things on Saturday and Sunday. Let them do it over the weekend, but force them to have the filibuster and, you know, let it all be there on C-SPAN and let it be there on the news. And, you know, they can filibuster an empty chamber if they have to, but force them to have the filibuster. I think it's just that Harry Reid has been afraid. And not just Harry Reid, by the way, the entire leadership of the Democratic Party in the U.S. Senate has been afraid to take on the Republicans. And the Republicans are certainly not afraid to take them on. Remember, when they were not only threatening a filibuster, they were threatening, when they controlled the majority, they were threatening that if the Democrats tried to filibuster, they'd blow up the filibuster rule. It was called the nuclear option.
Right.
So, I mean, this is just, it's all political theater. It's all bluff. And
there's one more thing that it would shut down. It would shut down fundraising. But
well, actually, yeah. But, you know, the flip side of this, maybe not, because, you know, they can still meet with lobbyists and, you know, with their palms out. And for that matter, as America gets to see how toxic the Republicans are while they're doing their filibuster, I think, frankly, it would help Democratic candidates. But Jeff, I got to move along. Thanks for the call and thanks for raising the issue. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us. Our daily update of what's going on in Washington, D.C. from an accredited White House and Congressional and Pentagon and U.N. and everything else, a real reporter. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. Well, the Congressional Budget Office is now projecting a $1.2 trillion budget deficit for 2009 and unemployment to increase to more than 9% early next year. And we have a couple of contrasting statements. Yeah, I know. It's huge. Huge.
That's I mean, particularly when you figure that unemployment right now, the way it's calculated now versus the way it was calculated in the 1930s, you have to shave about 10 points off it. And so we're talking about 19% unemployment if this was 1932, when unemployment was actually 33 or 34%, which was incredibly terrible. But still, I mean, 9% unemployment, you know, given, you know, because Reagan reconfigured how we do it and then Clinton reconfigured how we calculate it. So we don't count people who have given up work, you know, trying to find a job. We don't count people who are working part time. We don't, you know, all
right.
These other things. I mean, if they're saying it's 9%, it's that's going to be terrible pain.
It certainly is. We have a couple of contrasting statements that have been released, one by Senator John Cornyn of Texas saying it's deeply concerning. especially since it does not include President-elect Obama's spending proposal that may total more than $1 trillion. Congress cannot keep writing checks and simply pass IOUs to our children and grandchildren. Our current trajectory is unsustainable, and the economic challenges are too great for business as usual to continue in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What this is, it's the two Santa Claus theory. And this was something that was rolled out in the Wall Street Journal back, I think it was the first year I was doing this show. It must have been like 2003 or something like that. And it was by a I'll have to track the details down and share them with people in the next segment. But the theory was, and this was actually put forward by a Republican strategist at a Republican caucus meeting back in the 1970s, was when the Republicans take control, what they should do is, and this is the late 70s, what they should do is spend like crazy and borrow like crazy. And the spending will make it look like things are really good, so people will remember the time when the president and the House and Senate are under control of the Republicans as being times of prosperity. And the debt will increase to the point that when the cycle flips back, as it always does, and the Democrats get control, they will do the right thing, the responsible thing, and they'll try to pay down the debt, and they'll increase taxes, and that will cause people to think of the Democrats as the Scrooges, as the ones who are in favor of high taxes and fiscal wretchedness, basically. And the Republicans have literally been playing that game, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out about 5 years ago in a front-page article and later in an op-ed. They have literally been playing that game. Reagan started it. You know, he spent like a drunken sailor, no offense to drunken sailors, and borrowed virtually all of it. And then Clinton comes along and says, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to raise taxes. We're going to pay down the deficit. And then Bush comes along and goes back to the drunken spending again. And now the Republicans are trying to force Barack Obama back into that corner. They're trying to say, well, you know, you can't borrow and spend. After all, we did that. It's insane. Anyhow, back to the news.
Back to the news. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi also has a statement out on this. She says that the bleak Congressional Budget Office deficit projections reflect the devastating economic policies of the Bush administration that rewarded a wealthy few while undermining economic opportunity for the majority of Americans. And she says, while we cannot reverse the economic and fiscal mismanagement of the Bush administration overnight, Congress is already working with the incoming Obama administration to create good-paying jobs and put America back on a path to fiscal discipline and long-term economic prosperity. So two very different ways of looking at this.
Yeah. By the way, the two Santa Claus theory was developed by Jude Winiski, who died in 2005. He was a commentator, associate editor of the Wall Street Journal, from 72 to 78. He invented the term supply-side economics in 76, and he was the one who laid this suggestion out that they've been following. It's crazy. Victoria, thank you for the update.
Thank you.
Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Coming up, everything you know is wrong about success.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, you know, sometimes you know what you know, and sometimes you know what you don't know, and sometimes even everything you think you know, as the Fireside Theater likes to tell us, is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Is it possible that success is a toxic substance? Oversuccess.com, the website Oversuccess, the title of the book, Healing the American Obsession with Wealth, Fame, Power, and Perfection. Jim Rubin's with us. Hey, Jim.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Thanks for joining our show. So here you are talking about how dangerous it is to be obsessed with wealth and fame, and you send me a press release with your photo.
Well, I've got to. I'm a success addict myself.
Okay,
but at least I can see it in myself.
There you go. Let's both confess. I am a workaholic. Yep. I typically work 10, 11 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I have my whole entire life. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I'm having fun. I get bored when I'm not working.
Well, there's healthy success. And from it can be wealth, and that's good. And there's unhealthy success. And what's happened in America is that we've traded one for the other. And healthy success is when you're doing stuff that feels good to you inside, that matches your attributes, your skills, your talents, and that contributes to the well-being of those around you. Human beings have been a successful species. We dominate the globe because we're very good at being successful ourselves and making the groups in which we live and work successful. And that's gotten turned on its head in the United States, where we've become obsessed with the external badges and indicators of success, wealth, yeah, fame, power, physical perfection, and we're walking on each other's faces to get those badges.
We're talking with Jim Rubens, the author of this new book, Over Success, Healing the American Obsession with Wealth, Fame, Power, and Perfection. Jim, back in the mid-70s, I had lunch with, as I recall, his name was Nathan Gray. He was the guy who founded Oxfam in the U.S., and he had started a number of nonprofits and done a lot of – it was a very successful guy, and I was, you know, a kid in my 20s, And I had started a couple of businesses and had some success at that point. And I said, how do you decide what you're going to do next with your life? You know, because we were both kind of serial entrepreneurs, and only he was really good at it. And he said, I have three criteria. And here they are in reverse order, from the least important to the most important. Number one, least important, can I make a good living at it? Number two, middle importance, will it have a net positive impact in the world? You know, will it change other people's lives or the world for the better? And number three, and the most important, can I have a hell of a lot of fun doing it? And he said, when something comes along that satisfies all three of those criteria and it feels right to me, then I say yes and I do it. And I adopted that. I stole that from him. And that has, you know, every company that I've started has had a mission statement. All of our employees, you know, we would put the mission statement on the wall. We would have weekly meetings where we would say, okay, we're running this company in the context of trying to improve communications for people or trying to improve quality of life for people or, you know, whatever our mission. And our mission statement always had to do with making the world a better place. It seems to me, I'm peripherally involved with a couple of companies that mostly my company does business with right now. And I don't know that any of them have mission statements anymore. It's almost like that was a quaint thing from, you know, the 1930s to the 1970s or something. Has Americans' business culture just totally, particularly since Reagan and the Greed is Good era, totally gone in the toilet and it's all about making money? Or is that just my, you know, weird liberal lefty perspective?
Well, there's no question that ethics have are at a bottoming trend in the U.S. A record 82% of Americans, and this is Gallup polling, which has tracked this over decades. Americans think that our moral values are weak and declining. We see that in business, but we can't just point at business or people at the top or the bottom. It's all of us. Two out of three high school kids we found about a month ago, Josephson Institute found two out of three high school students, college students, cheat on tests, admit doing it anonymously, and yet 9 out of 10 of them think it's fine. 4 out of 10 doctors admit to making false claims to insurance companies. Tax cheating, according to the IRS, which keeps data on this, has more than tripled since 1990. 9 out of 10 job seekers falsify their resumes. We don't trust each other anymore. Nearly half of Americans don't trust each other, and that's
up. There's some questions on some of that. First of all, the number of people who are cheating the IRS. We have for 28 years now, since Reagan became president, been told that the government is an evil thing, and you know has no intrinsic value. Therefore, cheating the IRS arguably has been elevated as a moral value, as a moral virtue. And with regard to kids cheating, my understanding is that while more kids are admitting to cheating, the statistics seem to indicate that the number of kids who are actually cheating hasn't changed over time. And the fact that more of them are admitting to it is an indicator of one of two things. Either A, kids are more honest these days, or perhaps more ominous, B, they don't have the moral compass to begin with to know that they should have lied to say that they didn't cheat, even though they did, because they should know that it's wrong, but they don't know that it's wrong, if you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, people, you know, Americans know what's wrong. We know that our ethical standards are declining. They are declining. I track several dozen hard data indicators in the book Over Success showing our psychological, social decline, our ethical declines are one of them. It's very, very well tracked. If you pick, you can find some that don't show this, but it's very clear, and we know it in ourselves. The Gallup polling I mentioned
right.
shows that we know that this is a problem, and it's reflected in our attitude toward government. It's reflected in the way that businesses run. Many businesses do have mission statements, ignore them. But some businesses are run very well and very humanely. I like to give the example of, salute the standards you've taken for yourself in your own entrepreneurship. W.L. Gore Corporation, very profitable, $2 billion multinational corporation. What they've done is the employees own the company. The employees generally choose their own boss. And here's what's interesting about this that ties into the over-success thesis. One of the problems we have is that the social groups in which we're operating now have become so big and distant and non-humane, we don't have durable, lasting relationships with people that we know and see face-to-face. What they've done in W.L. Gore, they force operating units not to become larger than about 150, 200 people. They won't build buildings bigger than that, and so it requires people who work with one another to know one another, know who can be trusted, know who's good at what, and that way people can get success, respect for what they do well. This is what's
right. This is the one that was this was documented in that that book about how people can only really know 150 people at a time, that it tracks brain size in various mammals and social
exactly.
size.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating research. Back in 1972, when a few times I actually had a job, I was working for a national chain as a manager of a couple of stores, the mall stores, and we had to give a test. It was called the Reed Report to people, and it had these really absurd questions like, you discover that your mother has been shoplifting. Do you A, call the police and turn her in, B, sit her down and have a long talk, C, return the stuff, things like that. And I said to my superiors at the time, for me to pass this test, I'd have to lie, because the correct answer is you call the police. But you know, I wouldn't call the police on my mother. And the guy, my boss, said, that's exactly right. We want people to lie on this honesty test because there is a small percentage, 5, 10, 15%, we don't know how big it is, a small percentage of people who actually don't know enough to lie. In other words, they don't even know that it's wrong. Has that changed over time, the number of people who are just lacking a moral compass in America?
I don't know the answer to that, but I do know the answer, and this is in the research. We're not doing enough of patrolling one another. Look at it like the broken windows theory. Good data just published in the journal Science about a month ago. It works. Here's an example of how this works. If people are put into a location where there's graffiti or garbage in the ground, they tend to break other laws or unwritten rules. What we're not doing is we're not doing something that scientists call costly third-party sanctioning. You're standing in a line. Parents are in front of you. Their kids are misbehaving, making a lot of noise, disturbing the public peace. Costly third-party sanctioning means that you standing in line should ask the parents, require the parents, hey, take care of your kids, calm them down.
Right.
It's costly because you're going to get sanctioned, you're going to get a bad stare. But if too few of us do this, if too few of us watch out, call the person on shoplifting, call out the problem, then the incidence of these problems grows. It becomes imbued in our culture that it's okay to cheat and lie. We know when we're cheating and lying, but we're not falling on each other before.
It's kind of the Kitty Genovese syndrome from a different era.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting point and an interesting book, Jim. Jim Rubens is the author. Oversuccess.com, the website. The title of the book, Over Success, Healing the American Obsession with Wealth, Fame, Power, and Perfection. Jim, thanks for dropping by today.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270, our phone number, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, airamerica.com, for our free live video stream. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Do you have tax problems? Well, here's the solution. Taxmasters. It's that simple. Taxmasters will help solve your tax problems. Do you owe back taxes? Are you being audited? Do you have several years of unfiled returns? Is the IRS calling or sending threatening letters? Whatever your tax-related problem, the former IRS agents and tax professionals at Taxmasters can help you today. Call them now at 800-581-0452. That's 1-800-581-0452. Or go to txmstr.com. Again, that's TXMSTR.com. Taxmasters will get between you and the IRS. They'll make sure they treat you fairly and treat you with respect. Don't take on the IRS by yourself. The folks at Taxmasters have helped many good people just like you. Call Taxmasters right now to get started. 1-800-581-0452. That's 1-800-581-0452. Or go to TXMSTR.com. Again, that's TXMSTR.com. Taxmasters will solve your tax problems.
Ed Schultz.
Is this the man?
No, this is the man talking to the man. Ed Schultz, what's going on?
Noon to 3.
Barack Obama with us. I know you voted for the farm bill. Can you speak to the folks in the heartland on ag and energy?
I come from the heartland, and I come from an agricultural state. My record goes back 10 years.
The Ed Schultz Show.
What I'm most concerned about are family farmers and family ranchers.
Noon to 3.
We've got to make sure that they're getting help, not just big agribusiness.
AM 620 KPOJ. Online at 620kpoj.com.
At a time when Portland homeowners need it the most, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive to a 50-year low. So if you've been patiently waiting for that perfect time to refinance, pull the trigger today and lock in rates as low as, are you ready? 5% flat with an APR of 5.25. I'm Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity, and this dream rate can vanish in the blink of an eye. So be decisive and grab the phone right now. We all know this financial crisis will end, and when it does, you'll be so glad you locked in that 5% rate with an APR of 5.25. Listen, when others can't help, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money with zero out-of-pocket expenses. So call 718-1000 today. And when you like it, lock it. 503-718-1000.
Paramount Equity, lending with expertise. Paramount Equity Mortgage.
License number ML3256.
What if I said you could erase your wrinkles, tighten your skin, and make frown lines disappear from view? All without surgery or injections. With all the creams you've tried, you're probably skeptical. So I'm going to prove it to you by sending you a free trial of a scientific breakthrough called hydroxytone. Shed years from your appearance faster than you ever thought possible.
I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looked so young.
I told her I couldn't believe how smooth her face looks. She's lost, what, 10 years at least?
Request your risk-free trial of this proven breakthrough today. The results are so impressive. Hydroxytone was given away in VIP gift bags at international film festivals.
She always looked good to me, but now I can't believe how young she looks.
Call now for your free trial of hydroxytone. For a limited time, try it before you buy it. 1-800-933-9722. But hurry, when this offer's gone, it's gone. Call 1-800-933-9722. 1-800-933-9722.
Now at Staples. Save big on everything your office needs with Staples Dollar Deals, like writing pads, Sharpies, and binder clips. Dollar pricing valid. In-store only. 1409 through 11009. Limit supply.
The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face. If you experience this, call 911 immediately. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Some people say a man is made out of mud, and other men say that it's a muscle and blood, a muscle and blood, a skin and bone. I got a mind that's weak and a back of that's strong, and it's 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. Saint Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't. bingo. I owe my soul to the company store.
Oh, no, I'm going to have that stuck in my brain for the rest of the day. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Oh, my. Can you imagine? This is where it gets truly strange. This guy right here.
You know, McCain has fought and bled for our country, loves our country. There's too many questions with Barack Obama and his loyalty to our country, and I question that greatly.
This guy, Joe the Plumber, is now going to become, at least so the story goes, a war correspondent. Yep, he's putting down his wrench as well. You know, he wasn't actually a Union plumber, and his name's not really Joe, and who knows if he even knows how to use a wrench. But anyway, he's picking up the reporter's notebook. Well, maybe, maybe not. But Samuel Wurzelbacher is going to spend 10 days covering the fighting, and so that he can, he tells WNWO-TV in Toledo he wants to let Israel's average Joes share their story. This is a great example of a guy trying to take his 15 minutes of fame and turn it into, you know, I don't know what, a week? We're going on months now, aren't we? We're going on absolute months. Incredible.
You know it's nice when the postman has a letter in his sack for you, because the mail must go through.
Okay, we get mail. I just have to share these with you. This is just great. These two emails arrived within 5 minutes of each other in the last half hour. In response to my having the vice president of Countrywide Mortgage and on about his book. And, you know, I gave the guy a pretty hard time. We typically don't do suck-up interviews on this show, particularly with politicians, but even with authors. And you know, I told him, he tried to say, well, you know, it's the responsibility of the consumer. And I'm like, no, don't give me that stuff. And, well, you know, these companies are just doing what they could do. Well, no, the companies lobbied to change their... So anyway, here is the first email. Tom was a little tough on the guest from Countrywide. Before damning him, take a look at the Boston Fed report from 1972, which talks about the need to increase home ownership among minority groups and the rules that should be used when evaluating loans for minority buyers. Following these rules, Countrywide received extensive praise from the minority community. And there's a couple of links here. Okay, thank you, Joseph. That was followed by a message from Bob and Mary, who said, how can you have the Countrywide guy on promoting his book after he and his country have raped this country and contributed to the mess we're in? No way should he be allowed to try to scam this country by making more money off his book. Shame on you, Tom. Okay. I have to assume that the second letter writer didn't actually listen to the entire interview. But maybe. I don't know. Maybe you just wanted me to call him names or something. I think I sort of did that. Our number, 866-303-2270. Roland Burris, is he going to be seated? The AP says yes. Harry Reid says no. Harry Reid says yes. Harry Reid says no. Obama says maybe. No, actually, Obama doesn't say anything, which is being taken as a maybe. Who knows? Who knows? Fred in Los Angeles. Hey, Fred, welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, that Countrywide marketer, a marketing guy, very appropriate he was in marketing.
Yeah.
His concern about corporate responsibility versus personal or consumer responsibility is, I think, rather simple to conclude that it is corporate responsibility that takes precedence over these problems, because it's the corporate mass marketing that is in this country, whether you see it in from the government with the smiling face of Sanjay Gupta.
Hmm.
Or with the you know, the balancing logo on Misty May's volleyball.
Not to mention lobbying. I mean, people say, well, you know, we were just doing what was legal. Well, I'm sorry, you spent $1 million making sure it would become legal.
Well, you see, with that kind of disrespectful behavior toward the American people, it takes away our ability to think for ourselves. It takes away our responsibility. And that needs to change, whether it's for regulating the free speech of these commercial enterprises or keeping the big commercial interests out of government. I'm not sure exactly what should be done, but the personal responsibility can be restored. And when it is restored, we won't lose track also of the social responsibility that makes success actually realistic. If you want to look at social responsibility as a worldwide rather than a local phenomenon.
Fred, this is excellent point. This is, and thanks for making it. This is the big cleavage between the libertarian worldview and the conservative worldview. Libertarians are just Republicans who want to smoke dope and get laid. And the traditional American worldview, which folks like Limbaugh like to refer to as the liberal worldview. This is the traditional American worldview. The traditional American worldview, all the way back to the founding of this country, is that we're all in this together. It's a we society. And we look out for each other. And when things are way too complex for one person to really understand, like, how do I know if this food has lead poisoning in it? You can't taste it. How do I know? How do I know that it's not contaminated with salmonella? At that point, or how do I know that this mortgage isn't going to blow up in my face? At that point, we collectively have a responsibility to protect us. There is no personal responsibility associated with that. It's us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270. Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Hey, just a quick reminder of some of the stuff coming up. The week of January 18th through the 20th, I'll be doing my show live from Washington, D.C. Still trying to figure out what we're going to do about the inaugural itself, because Barack Obama gets sworn in at noon, and I go on the air live at noon Eastern time. And so I'll keep you up to date on that. But I'll be there one way or another. And that night, January 19th, which I believe is Monday night. Is that right, Sean? Yeah. Okay. Monday night is the MLK Day pre-inaugural tribute, at Busboys and Poets, 10 p.m. to midnight in the Langston Hughes Room. This is put on by Progressive Democrats of America, which I'm on the advisory board of and honored to be. And it will be me and Medea Benjamin and Jody Evans and John Nichols and Donna Smith and Representative Raul Grijalva and Representative Jim McGovern and Tom Hayden. And for tickets to that, if you want to show up and hang out with us, and I'm pretty sure that's Monday night, January 19th. You're certain it is. Okay, yeah. Monday night. Yeah, go to pdamerica.org, as in Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org, and click on the events calendar. March 7th, we're going to be doing a one-day cruise in Seattle with me and some of the folks from Talk 1090, KPTK. You can find the information about that, our Seattle listeners, on their website. On March 19th, I'll be in Chicago debating Michael Medved, and that is sponsored by Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, formerly WCPT. And on May 1st and 2nd, I'll be in Denver, Colorado. I am keynoting the Green Festival in Denver. And so that should be a lot of fun. So just an update on, you know, what's on my calendar here coming up. And, geez, I need to buy the tickets for that trip to Denver. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Joe in Charlottesville, Virginia, listening on WVAX. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I just want to talk about kind of the morality of, American businessmen, Bernie Madoff and Ken Lay and people like that.
Yeah, Lance Madoff. Let's not offend Rachel by getting close to her pronunciation. It's like he made off with the money. That's how you say his name. Really?
There
seriously.
You go.
Yeah. Anyway, you go. Yeah. Your point.
Well, it's about sociopathy or psychopathy, which means that somebody doesn't have any guilt. They don't have any empathy for their victims, and they kind of con people throughout life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is almost kind of a prized attribute in the business world here in America today. And I mean, there are studies that say about 3% of Americans could be sociopaths. And again, I'm not talking about mass murders. I'm just talking about con men and people that take advantage of other people.
Yeah, there have been some good books on, you know, The Sociopath Next Door, and who's the psychiatrist who wrote the book about evil. Here's an interesting thing to contemplate, Joe. Let's assume for a moment that there actually is some semblance of a marketplace for labor in the United States. That is to say, where there is a lot of supply of labor, prices for labor drop fairly low. So if you're looking for somebody to do, you know, lawn work or something, you don't have to pay a lot because there's a lot of people willing to do that. On the other hand, if there is a small number of people willing or capable of doing something, let's say brain surgery, then the price of that labor goes up. Okay, so you with me so far?
Yes.
Okay, so this then raises the question. Somebody doing brain surgery can make, let's say, up to $500,000, $1 million a year. Why is it even possible that somebody like the former CEO of United Healthcare, the second largest health insurance company in the United States, William McGuire, why would he be paid $1.7 billion? What is it that he could possibly bring to the table? How is there such a shortage of whatever skill set it is that he has that it's worth, over a 10-year period, $1.7 billion in compensation, as was reported on the front page of the Wall Street Journal last year? What possible skill set could he have? I have what I think is the answer. I'm curious if you have, you know, what your thoughts are on this.
Well, I've been a manager in Fortune 500 companies and have run millions of dollars in sales. And what I can tell you is people look at these people and say, well, they're a rainmaker. They're going to, you know, increase share owner value of our company.
Right. But don't you think that there's more than a few thousand people in the United States or even a few tens of thousands of people in the United States who have the skill set to be able to successfully run a large corporation?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So therefore, that skill set in and of itself doesn't justify a $1 billion salary. Or in the case of Lee Raymond, the former chairman of ExxonMobil, with his $400 million retirement package, not to mention his billions of hundreds of millions in compensation. I would submit to you, Joe, that what's going on is that there actually is a shortage of a particular skill set. And that the need for that skill set came along with the Reagan era, with the absolute or large deregulation of business and the creation of these giant conglomerates. And that skill set is, A, having been born with enough wealth and family status that you can comfortably move in upper class circles business-wise and get into the very best schools. B, being smart enough to get a decent education, a good solid education from the best business schools. C, having a good competent understanding of how business works and you know, just broadly having that skill set. And that would put you in the category of maybe you could earn $500,000 a year. But then D, the fourth thing that is the thing that narrows that down from there's hundreds of thousands of people who meet that criteria in the United States to maybe there's only 1,000 people who meet that criteria in the United States, maybe only even 500. D, you're a sociopath with those three other characteristics. And then, you know, so a company, you're somebody who can lay off 20,000 people and go to bed at night. You know, the former chairman of GE, Jack Welch, brags in his autobiography about how he went over to India and said, hey, wait a minute, there's a bunch of people here who speak English. I can shut down all of our back office operations, all our phone operations all over the United States and quit paying Americans for this work and start doing it in India. And how he invented outsourcing white-collar jobs to India. That, in my opinion, requires a type of mentality which is very rare and which some people would describe as being a sociopath. That's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lack of empathy, whether it be your victims or your employees.
Right.
And there's just no sense of guilt whatsoever.
Look at the chainsaw. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That is prized in the business world here in America. And I know that for a fact because, again, I was a manager for, a Fortune 100 company,
right.
One of the most recognized brand names in America. And we were there to increase your owner value and increase our cash operating profit. And you almost did that any which way you could.
That's right. And this is what Reagan brought to our corporate culture, because it wasn't that way. I'm old enough to remember it wasn't that way before the 1980s and all the mergers and acquisitions and everything else. And yeah. Remember Chainsaw Al, I'm forgetting his last name, the guy who was the president of Sunbeam. They would, company after company would bring him in and they'd pay him like $20, $30, $50 million for a month's work. And all he did was he'd come in and he'd lay off 20,000 people. And then he'd move on to the next job. They called him Chainsaw Al, and I can't remember his last name. This was 25 years ago. And he was famous for this because he could sleep at night after having destroyed the lives of 20,000 people. And companies had to actually hire this guy because nobody in the company could engage in that kind of sick, twisted behavior. Joe, I got to move along, but thank you for the call, and thanks for bringing up the topic. I actually have the book that I just finished writing for Viking Penguin, which will be out this coming summer. It's actually available in the shameless plug department here on Amazon for pre-order right now. It's called Threshold. It's my next book. It's a sequel to Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And there's actually a chapter in there, a part of a chapter, on this very topic, the sociopaths in our business community and what they're doing to this country. Mary in Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Well, actually, you got a new signal there, Mary, don't you?
Yeah, we're on 1190 out here now.
Great, great. So what's up, Mary?
I had a comment about the mortgage thing, but first I just want to say about these huge CEO bonuses. You know, not only do I think these guys have to be sociopaths, but you got to wonder how many of them, like the United Healthcare guy, get $1.7 billion and how much of that they could be kicking back to the company, you know, and then taking it in the form of stocks instead. I understand these bonuses are 100% tax deductible, and that's why these guys are getting the huge bonuses, I think, because it's a big write-off for the company, and it wouldn't surprise me if they're getting money kickbacks from the people they actually give the bonuses to.
Well, an awful lot of that was in stock compensation, and here's how it works. A company can deduct up to $1 million in compensation
right.
to its executives. After that $1 million, they can't deduct it at 100% rate. But then what they do is they give people stock options. And when people exercise those stock options, they pay a maximum income tax rate of 15% on the stock option because it's a capital gain. And when Bush came in, you know, he changed it so that if you make your money from capital gains, you pay a maximum, and it's graduated, in fact. If you make a small amount on capital gains, you pay less than 15%. But the top tax bracket for those guys is 15%. The top tax bracket for people who work for a living, people like you and me, is 36% right now. So.
Right. Okay. The other comment that I had was regarding the credit crisis. I sell real estate here in Phoenix, and I got to tell you, this idea that you have to have, you know, an 800 credit score to get a loan is absolutely not true. It depends on the type of loan. That could be true for conventional mortgage. But to get an FHA loan in here in Phoenix, the maximum you can borrow is $267,000. You only have to have a minimum credit score of 580.
That's for a conventional mortgage?
No, that's for FHA.
Right, but I mean it's not a gotcha mortgage. That's good news, Mary. Thank you for the call. We got to take a break. 45 minutes past the hour.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ. Portland's only progressive talk station.
Lionel with you. Most of you either have or know someone that has an inflammatory disease. You know, arthritis, asthma, allergies, diabetes, heart disease, sinus conditions, and even back and joint pain are crippling our country. There's an anti-inflammatory and pain reliever that has been prescribed by physicians for over 30 years in Europe and Asia. It's so effective, it's been used by Olympic athletes to deal with the pain and swelling from injury and surgery. Serrapeptase RX comes with an unconditional guarantee and has no known side effects or interactions with medications. Just $23.99 for a 2-month supply, and I want you to try it. Visit www.myairamericaradio.com or call 1-888-825-9199. That's www.myairamericaradio.com or call 888-825-9199. 1-888-825-9199 for Serrapeptase RX.
She's loud, she's proud, and she definitely draws a crowd.
If he had gotten into politics to steal, he certainly picked the wrong time because we're broke.
Randy Rhodes.
There's nothing left to steal. You know, why are they asking, is he crazy? Just look at his hair. What's on the outside is pretty good indication of what he's thinking on the inside.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
He actually considered appointing himself to the Senate seat because he was afraid that he had sucked every corrupt dollar out of Illinois, so he wanted to go national.
3-6
on AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, your ally in a bad economy. We'll make sure you're not wasting your money or unknowingly running your vehicle into the ground. We provide value by offering quality service in a logical, prioritized manner, focusing on safety recommendations first, breakdown items next, and then your maintenance needs. Trust is the main reason people use our service. Our clients know we deliver comprehensive, honest, no BS service. We won't sell unneeded or random nonsense. Our service advisors aren't paid sales commission, so you can trust they're recommending services you need, not just building a paycheck. We're an ASE Blue Seal of Excellence facility, and our technicians efficiently service your vehicle right the first time. We offer a no-hassle 18-month, 18,000-mile warranty, free shuttle service, and in this economy, our same as cash financing can help. Let our existing clients tell you why they choose us. Go to our website at tomdwyer.com and watch the detailed client testimonials. And call us at 503-230-2300. Please let us help you preserve your car and your cash.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
Why spend more than you have to on your life insurance? Did you know that term life insurance rates have fallen over 60% in the last 10 years? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. At AccuQuote.com, we monitor the rates, features, and financial strength of hundreds of life insurance products. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can protect his family with $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $19 a month. Female rates are even lower. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life policies that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Why not find out how much you can save? Write down this number and call today for your free quote. Call 800-500-2171. One five-minute call is all it takes. 800-500-2171. That's 800-500-2171.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the perks for KPOJ listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers. Here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of hundreds of dollars. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts only for KPOJ listeners, only at Floor Trends Northwest in Sellwood.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Cause when I was a child with my heart in my hand, I pledged my allegiance to the flag of this land, where Kennedy was killed in a Texas cow town, and we learned how to hide it from the bomb underground. So when the things that you tell me don't match what you do, I'd be a fool not to have a huge problem with you. And I'll still stand and fight for this land of the free. First we'll take back the ground that we lost in D.C. So stand and let your voice be heard. Stand and let your voice be heard. Stand up, speak out. This is still our country, so stand and let your voice ring free. Stand
transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Tom Hartman here with you. And a tip of the hat to the folks in our chat room and several people who emailed me. Chainsaw Al Dunlap. Right. That's the guy. And, you know, why is it that it's so hard to find? Well, because it requires that certain kind of upbringing, that certain kind of education, that certain business skill set, along with a certain type of mental profile, shall we say, in my humble opinion. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Mike in Ludlow, Massachusetts. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Good day. I'd like to cast one vote of no confidence in Harry Reid first.
as majority leader. Second,
so noted.
You need to follow the chain of authority. The people ratified the Constitution to provide for the public good. Constitution created the corporations, so that must
actually it didn't
for the public good.
Yeah, the word, Mike, just a small correction here. The word corporation does not exist in the Constitution. The founders and framers were very, very concerned about the rise of the corporate form. It was a relatively new thing at that time. And, in fact, up until around the 1860s in the United States, there were probably fewer than 2,000 corporations in the entire country. And when they were typically created to do major projects, like the Erie Canal Corporation, for example, is one of the better examples, or to build railroads, which were public-private enterprises initially. And they had fixed lifespans. They couldn't last more than 20, 30, or 40 years, depending on the state. Their articles of incorporation required that their first obligation be to serve the public. Their second obligation was to make money. They were barred from owning stock in other corporations. They could only do one thing at a time. They could only do one type of business. If you wanted to do two things, you wanted to run a railroad, and you also wanted to build cars, you had to have two separate corporations. I mean, all of these things, these were the rules all prior to the 1880s. And
yes,
it all changed in the 1880s.
That's what I wanted to get reiterated in light of Mr. Michelson pointing out that the first goal countrywide was to make money for the shareholders.
Right.
That was
it. That's how people interpret it now, and in fact, some people even think the Supreme Court has ruled that. It was actually the Michigan Supreme Court that ruled that in the case of the Dodge brothers against Henry Ford. When they sued Henry Ford in the early 30s for paying $5 a day to his workers when the Dodge brothers were paying $1 a day, and they said that, or a dollar, whatever it was, buck and a half, and they said that Henry Ford was not serving his employees, or his stockholders, rather. And Ford's defense was that he was, in fact, serving the interests of his stockholders because he was increasing the market of potential buyers for his cars. And the Michigan Supreme Court accepted that defense. But the assumption was that the first job of a corporation is to increase stockholder value, and that assumption is stuck. It's not, frankly, as far as I know, it's not something that is an absolute requirement at law. Although with regard to the tax code, it can be very difficult to deduct something for a corporation, to deduct expenses that don't in some way benefit the corporation. Even altruistic things, you have to frame them in the context of, we helped out the local community to increase our good public relations, which will ultimately increase our sales. And there's something wrong with that.
I guess there is.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate the call. Ken in Washington. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Kit, it's Kit.
Ken, I'm sorry.
When Michael Moore's movie Sicko came out, very few people wanted to interview him on TV, but they did put him on one station, and the corporate people ran up this flack against him called Sanjay Gupta, and he took on Michael Moore, and the exchange was pretty dramatic.
I remember it well.
Yeah, and Gupta was basically big pharma, you know, big insurance. I mean, he really was a toad, the party line on incorporation. And I just don't believe him. He's a face. He's a pretty face, you know, pretty watch case, you know, gold watch case. Watch doesn't work.
You know, I started out the program saying I have a lot of concerns about Sanjay Gupta as our Surgeon General. On the other hand, and the basis of my concerns is that over and over and over again, I've seen him on television take the position that Canada has a terrible healthcare system, we have a wonderful one, that we don't want to have socialized medicine, all this kind of stuff. He's been a real cheerleader for private for-profit healthcare. On the other hand, that's the side on which his bread is buttered. He's been in the corporate media, and the corporate media, particularly television and particularly cable television, gets a hell of a lot of money from the pharmaceutical companies. So it's moderately conceivable that he's not saying this out of some deep conviction, but he's just doing what he's paid to do. And if Barack Obama pays him to be an advocate for universal health care, and he can wrap his mind around it somehow, the guy, A, is a good doctor. B, you know, young people in this country have a lot of admiration for him. I think, you know, the conversation that you and I are having has probably flown right past the radar of the vast majority of Americans, because they really don't even understand the difference between, for example, single-payer and socialized health care. And he might be a good guy. I don't know. I'm very skeptical for the exact same reasons you are, and frankly quite concerned about it. But, you know, maybe. Maybe he can change his stripes, as it were, or maybe he can change his position. I would hope that Obama had, you know, sat him down and had a long conversation with him and said, listen, if you're going to come in on this thing, you're going to have to be a strong advocate for Medicare for all or something close to it. But time will tell. As I said, you know, Obama isn't president yet. His cabinet isn't the cabinet yet. Let's wait and see how it shakes out. Coming up tomorrow, Tina Brown, the unsinkable Tina Brown, is going to be with us. Her new adventure at thedailybeast.com. Colonel Robert Chandler, we're going to be talking about the survival of Western capitalism. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there. Get active. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.